10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal.
Welcome out and abouters. I am your host, Captain DJ Mave, and I am here at KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM. And, you know, we're going to talk about an anniversary that happened today that didn't get any real press at all. We looked through the newspaper. There wasn't anything about it. And I don't know. But we have in the studio with us today, we have Rusty Nelson and Jim Tate. And Jim and I were both in the Air Force together, but we're peaceniks. And Rusty was the founder of Spokane's Peace and Justice, well, Peace and Justice Action League Spokane. And he has a bunch of events that he wants to talk about. And we're going to talk about Hiroshima. We've decided, I guess we're going to say Hiroshima. I don't know. Hiroshima?
I think it's fair to say it either way.
Yeah, I think so.
That's one thing we can say without offending anybody.
Yeah. And that was Rusty. And why don't you two just go ahead and introduce you. Jim, they're going to know who you are. But Rusty, go ahead and introduce yourself. And then Jim, you introduce yourself.
Well, I am with Spokane Veterans for Peace, which really is what brings me here. We started a few years ago commemorating Hiroshima and Nagasaki because, well, I don't remember why we started. We were interested in it, and yeah. We were interested that people just let it slide. And also, one thing that kind of haunts me yet is that every nation state is all about retribution and retaliation for foreign policy.
Yeah.
Not just military policy, but foreign policy, period. And in Japan, where we did this kind of unimaginable damage, Japan has August 6th as Peace Day.
Huh. Not Revenge on America Day.
Not I'll get you back. Or just wait.
Yeah.
But Peace Day.
Wow.
And to me, that goes back, well, I'll get into Sadako a little bit later.
Okay.
But Sadako brought a lot of compassion out of people all over the world. When the book Sadako and the Thousand Paper Cranes came out in 1977.
Wow.
So that's part of our shtick, too. We're going to do something on Sadako tomorrow.
Okay, and we'll talk. You had an event earlier today, and we can talk about that too.
Yeah.
Jim, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Jim Tate. I do the Americana Avenue show here at the station, and I'm also a veteran. And so this is a big point for me too. I mean, it'd be great if August 6th was Peace Day around the world, not just in Japan. But unfortunately, that's not the case.
Yeah. And Jim's used to be right show used to be on right before mine, but now on
Wednesday. We used to hook up every week. So
I know, and I miss you still.
Yeah. So I'm on Wednesday nights now, 6 to 8.
Yeah, that's right. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about the event that happened today, Rusty?
All right, it was kind of interesting. Frankly, I have to confess that we've been doing it at this location for maybe 4 or 5 years. We meet at the Michael P. Anderson statue, the astronaut statue there by the river and by the convention center. And today we were told that we could not do it there because it was private property. The facilities district owns that, and it's not public like the park is. So we couldn't stand in the shade there.
Oh, boy.
Or sit in the shade and listen to the raging grannies sing, or hear our speaker, who was Professor Majid Sharifi of Eastern Washington University's foreign, international studies person. He's the director of the International Studies Program at Eastern. And so that was a little disruptive, and we kind of went back and forth talking with them, and finally decided we're going to stay. So we figured people don't find out about this. You know, we could we don't have a lot of people there, but we have a good program, and we have a lot of passion around this commemoration. So we figured, well, they wanted to call, they were threatening to call the police, of course. And said, well, they had to do their job. I said, you do your job, I'll do my job. My job's making peace here. And so we'll talk to the police when they get here. Well, they eventually did call the police after we got our program started. And the police didn't want to do anything. They haven't broken any windows, have they?
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's a very encouraging sign.
That made it a little different. That changed things up a little bit. We were really trying to bring things into the present and future, which, you know, you look back and it's pretty dismal looking back there. So we like to bring it up to date. But, of course, that involves some dismal things, too, like the statistics and about the new ICBMs and the updated nuclear weapons stockpile and that kind of thing. So... We just feel like we have a lot of responsibility in this.
Yeah, and maybe, Jim, we can talk a little bit about the new missiles that we were kind of talking about a little bit before, and Project 2025, and then we're going to circle back, because I think we have listeners who probably, you know, it's amazing. Well, we can't even remember what it was like 4 years ago when Donald Trump was president and COVID and all the mistakes that he made. People's amnesia is intense. And if you never even lived during that time, it's going to be especially easy for people not to remember. So we're going to talk a little bit about those events. But why don't we talk a little bit about where we're heading as far as armament-wise?
Okay. I just pulled up some stats right before I left here. And currently, the United States owns, controls 42.7% of the nuclear weapons in the world. And Russia has a few more than that at 45%. So the U.S. and Russia are the major players here. China only has 4% of the nuclear weapons in the world. And then we have other countries, France, the U.K., India, Pakistan, and it just starts getting lower. And Israel has 0.7% of the world's nuclear weapons. So I think somewhere around 100. And North Korea has 0.2%, so just not many. They're just getting started. But the United States has just announced on July 9th that the Department of Defense announced the new Sentinel intercontinental ballistic missile to replace the older missiles that we have on alert right now that have been on alert for, you know, 60 years or whatever. And this is a program that is expected to cost, already there's cost overruns, about $141 billion. Just think about that kind of money, where that, what that could do in other areas of our government. Yeah.
And just a 50, it's about 50%, last time I checked, of discretionary income or discretionary spending funds of the budget is our defense budget.
Yeah.
So, you know, people don't know that. They think that social, you know, that... You pay your taxes, yeah, half of it goes to defense. So anyway, sorry.
Right, so these nuclear weapons have not been used since the day we're talking about, the anniversary of the bombings in Japan. Yet here we are buying 400 new ones for $141 billion. So just
if
something to think about.
If that price holds.
Yeah, if that price holds.
Not like
this that. Is, this new program is just getting going. This is through 2070. They're supposed to have 400 new missiles is the idea. Wow. So.
Okay.
Yeah, we had Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility and some other healthcare groups had a program just a few days back down in the on the first floor here in this in the central library on healthcare, not warfare. And they brought up a lot of statistics, and it's that switch back and forth. You know, Eisenhower famously pointed out how many schools you could build, how many teachers' salaries, and all of this kind of stuff with the military budget.
Right.
As he warned of the military-industrial complex. And now, of course, the figures are just so overwhelming when you get up into the trillions of dollars. But they did some switching back and forth and talking about what could be done. And one of them was a little over the top. They said it was something like you could pay the salaries of 200 million teachers in Washington or nurses or something, you know, yeah. The numbers. Well, I don't know what we would that do would with be, that. You
know, they'd be, well, you know, everybody get their breaks.
Yes.
You know, on the floor, everybody get their to eat lunch, that's for sure.
Might get somebody's attention.
Yeah.
Which is kind of tough in this business.
Yes, it is.
Maybe that money could buy a healthcare system that works.
Yeah, that'd be even better. That'd be better.
For everybody.
That's one of the things that bugs me so much about the veterans program and the Veterans Administration and the healthcare system. And I have run into this Cerner program at the local VA hospital, and it is really frustrating to think that there was a no-bid contract.
Yeah.
For $39 billion. Yeah. And just think of the health care you could produce while you're... I mean, get out your Rolodexes. You know, you could hire enough people to do Rolodexes and keep up with health care better than a computer system.
We'll explain what a Rolodex is later.
Sorry about that.
Well, you know, and you know what? And I'll give it to the people working at the VA. They just soldier through. I mean, it's like... They're like, well, I'll have to write that down because of our computer system.
Yes,
I'll have to do this.
Yes. And they're great. I mean, if you can get them on the phone, you know, that's fine. But, you know, I've been using computers myself, relic that I am, since 1971, I think.
Wow.
Of course, we used to program at an automated radio station where you have a slide thing.
That's right.
You program the whole thing just, okay.
Yeah. So why don't we talk a little bit about the history? I mean, what happened on August 6th, 1945?
Well, there's so much to go into here. And actually, last year, it was interesting for me because last year we did it on the 9th and talked about Nagasaki.
Yeah.
And brought in our regional involvement there with Hanford making the plutonium for the Nagasaki bomb. And I found out that this the Enola Gay, the B-29 with that first nuclear weapon that was dropped over Japan, had this just picture-perfect textbook flight. They did have to change targets because of some weather things, but everything just went great. Then 3 days later, the Nagasaki thing, the plane just barely made it. Their connector plane never showed up in the rendezvous place. It was bad weather. They almost crashed the plane. They almost ran out of fuel before they got back. Everything went wrong, except they did drop the bomb over their third choice target.
Wow.
But the original thing, I think, some people are still dealing with this Oppenheimer film.
Right.
Because it shows so much of the brilliance and the depravity of the whole program.
Yeah.
So that we have decisions being made that should have been made, should have been canceled out just by an effort to end the war with negotiations, which was right around the corner. Yeah. Could have been done on August 5th.
Yeah.
So the politics that got into it and everything, it just kind of, it's always distressing.
Yeah.
But once again, you jump to the 21st century, and it's like we're doing the same thing with bigger, worse weapons, more powerful weapons, more technology, more fail-safe mechanisms and all of that. So it's, you know, people should check out, just go to Wikipedia or something and, sure. and read about the bombing. Because I could get lost in the weeds just talking about it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Hanford and the role of enriching the uranium, I think, or was it the plutonium? I think it was uranium.
Plutonium was, all of the plutonium in the world at one point was at Hanford.
Was, okay. So, but you know, it was funny, when I was in, and I get maybe some of my listeners don't know, but I was a navigator, then a bombardier on B-52s. And one of, I remember being in, I think it was for... getting the training for B-52s that in Castle Air Force Base in California, they had a mock-up of one of the first, I can't remember which one it was, but I mean, it was just this crazy looking device of the bomb. But they, it said on the placard on it, it said something like Hansen Company, Spokane, Washington.
There you go.
And you know, and it was funny because R.A. Hansen out here, they were part of the MX missile program. They were building equipment for that. And I also had a friend who got a job out there, which was a great job to get, you know, in the late 70s. If you get a job at R.A. Hansen, it was great. He said that he said, I'm not supposed to tell anybody, but I'm building cruise missile parts there. So I always kind of wondered what R.A. Hansen did to build these bombs. They must have done something, because else why would they build the model, right? This model. They had some, their fingers were in it somehow. But I've searched for things and I've never been able to find anything about that. So,
well, you can get in trouble looking for things like
that. Oh, I know. Searching. Yeah.
You could get your clearance pulled.
Yeah, I know. Captain. Well, my last day in the Air Force, they said, you know, there's certain countries, and they took your clearance away, but I was doing my clearance away, and I was doing out briefing, and they said, you know, there's, now that you don't have your clearance, there's certain countries you're not allowed to go to. And I go, well, what countries? And they said, well, you don't have the clearance to know that now. And I just started laughing, and they got, because I thought the guy was kidding, because it's a pretty funny line. And he got angry with me, and he said, you should know which countries. Anyways, we got to do our 20-minute after the hour stuff. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about Jim was on the ground at Hiroshima. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some events. Now, you weren't there at the event. Later on, you were on the ground at Hiroshima.
Yeah, it was about 6 years ago, I think.
Yeah, and then we're going to talk about some of the other program that Rusty is doing around these events. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Hey there, folks. Join me for a musical trip along Americana Avenue. Now on Wednesday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. Hear the greatest progressive songwriters from yesterday and today. Each week, I'll feature a specific artist and a vinyl spin of the week. It's music that plays to the human condition. Wednesdays at 6 on Thin Air Community Radio.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for August 8th through the 13th. Thursday, Hurricane Ruth and Lisa Mann at the Black Diamond, Who Do You Do at Bolo's, and DJ Storm at the Red Room. Friday, Vika at Iron Goat Brewing, MC Chris and the Pink Sox at the Big Dipper, Blue Egyptian and Snacks at Midnight at the Chameleon, and the Jason Perry Band at the Wavy Bunch Night Market and Street Fair at Sprague and Sherman. Saturday, The Cat Herd at Chan's Red Dragon, Savelle the Native at Live Entertainment, and Shaky Graves and Attaboy at the Knitting Factory. Sunday, the Diego Romero Band at Arborcrest, Annalita, Midnight Drive, and the Cetra at the Big Dipper, and JoJo Knox at Zola. Monday, open mic with Wise Owl and Ben 10 at the Red Room, Imagine Jazz at the Bad Seed, and open mic at Live Entertainment. Monday and Tuesday, open jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, Kai and Friends at the Rocket Market, and Kava Shoal at Riverfront Eats. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Hi, this is Jeremy Whittington from Stage Left Theater. KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio, provides our region with information that might be omitted, overlooked, or even censored by mainstream media. Your radio station is powered by the communities they serve, and our radio programs are as rich and diverse as the Spokane community itself. Please make a pledge today by texting GIVE KYRS to 44321. Your support ensures that KYRS can continue to celebrate the rich diversity of our community.
Iranian women who are leading inspiring nationwide protests for basic human rights are among the main targets of violence from the Iranian authorities. The NCRI Women's Committee works extensively with Iranian women in and outside the country to support their struggle for freedom and equality. More information online at women.ncr-iran.org. Gee, welcome back. You are listening to Out and About on KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1, 92.3 FM. And I have Rusty Nelson and Jim Tate, and we're talking about the anniversary of Hiroshima. It was this date, 1945, that the bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. And people who visit there are totally moved by it and have their perspectives changed on a lot of things. And Jim, you were there, and I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about that, what that was like for you.
Sure. Yeah, I could do that. I went with my daughter over to Japan, and we did some traveling around. We stopped at the museum, the Hiroshima Peace Memorial Museum, which is there in the area right there where the bomb dropped 79 years ago. There was about 350,000 people living in the city at that time, and about 140,000 died. This is by the end of December from radiation. That's about where the number was. So it's estimated that, first of all, the bomb had about 16,000 tons of high-performance explosive. That's about the equivalent size of the nuclear blast. Approximately 50% of that energy was released in the form of the blast or the shock wave, 35% in the form of heat rays, and 15% in the form of radiation. So devastated the city. And it's really impressive to go there and look at the park and see there's like a couple of buildings there that are still standing that were destroyed, you know, there's still the remnants of them there.
Like the skeletal.
Yeah, the skeletal remains of the dome there of one of the buildings. And I was really impressed with the museum. As we were saying earlier, there was no, it was a very positive, peace-filled environment this museum was. And it was really quite amazing. And not only that, but just the city of Hiroshima now is just a bustling, energetic city that was built on top of the rubble. It's really quite impressive. We drove by, there's a professional baseball game going on while we were there, you know, and the Hiroshima Carp were playing. And it's just good to see that the city survived and came back 75 years later or so when I was there. It was quite impressive, but it was a really moving experience to be in the park and the museum there at that location. It was a very solemn place to be.
Yeah.
And one of the things I brought in today was a pretty famous book called Hiroshima by John Hersey, which is the story of six human beings who survived the explosion of the atomic bomb. And it's just a really neat way to try and get an understanding and feel for what it was actually like. There was Miss Shisaki, a clerk who had just sat down in her office, Mr. Nakamura, who was standing by her, Mrs. Nakamura, who was standing by her kitchen window when it hit. A Dr. Sasaki was carrying blood for a Wasserman test. And then it just kind of outlines Father Klein Sorge was reading a Jesuit magazine. So just kind of what these six people were doing at the time and then what they went through that day and after that day with all the devastation and death of loved ones and everything.
This, I think, was written in 1948 or 49, something like that.
Yeah,
this was the first that Americans heard about what actually happened.
Oh, yeah. Really?
With the explosion of that bomb. I mean, there had been a few pictures around, just kind of the antiseptic wasteland there, kind of like Gaza looks right now.
Yeah.
But this was just a real eye-opener for the American public. No, people just didn't have any idea.
Yeah.
Now, I was 1 year old when that explosion happened. My father was in China on board ship. He was a Navy chaplain.
Wow.
And I was a war baby, not a baby boomer. I was a war baby. I was born while my dad was on board ship. And, you know, there was this whole, well, thank goodness we didn't do that just for fun. You know, we had to, if we hadn't done that, then we would have had to
invade Japan.
A human wave going into Japan. And we all believed that.
Right. That's a common narrative for so long.
I think Gar Alperovitz in 1971 revealed what Truman had written in his diaries, which was that Japan was dying to surrender. I mean, they had made every overture, and we just put them off because, hey, Oppenheimer and those guys need to see if this thing works.
Mm.
They put a lot of work in it. Of course, this was one of the most amazing industrial projects in the history of the Earth.
Well, yeah.
But still.
And they also wanted to show our enemies what we had.
Yes, the firing the first shot of the Cold War show Stalin. Well, that was a little weak, too. But anyway, it's kind of sad. Let me, I want to read a poem I wrote 2 years
ago. That sounds good.
And it goes with Sadako because...
Let's talk. Sadako. You keep mentioning Sadako.
Okay.
Who is that?
Sadako was a young girl who actually lived in Hiroshima. At the time of the blast, she was at home, which was just far enough from the explosion that everyone in her family survived. Her father had some burns. She herself, an infant, was blown out of the window of the house.
Wow.
But not seriously hurt. But when she was 12 years old, she had started showing symptoms of radiation disease. Basically, she had leukemia, and she died at the age of 15. But she was made famous in 1977 by Eleanor Corr, who was a Canadian-American writer who wrote her story. Sadako was known a bit in Hiroshima just because she had done the folding paper cranes, trying to fold 1,000 of them before she died because there was a legend that that would bring peace on Earth if you could fold 1,000 paper cranes. And so this really, in 77, gave origami a pretty good kickstart in the U.S. for a while there and Canada. But This story is very touching and is sort of a novelization of Sadako's short life. And so I'm going to be reading this at the Shadel Park Library tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock and having a discussion if anybody wants to talk about it. And we'll have a lot of paper cranes there to show off, too.
Uh-huh.
But Mary Neighbor set this thing up, and Mary was going to be with us today, but she has COVID. And Mary has also been at the Ground Zero site in Hiroshima, and that's where she got her passion for this. And so she's always wanted to really get something going on this and bring it to the public's attention. But this I wrote, I think it was September of 2022, after we had had our August program. About the time Sadako was getting really sick, I was assembling a little bomber from a popular kit. She was making origami cranes, teaching people hope. The plastic history I was learning buried people like her before they were bombed, before they died. The radiation was 13 years old when it killed her. She was 15, living and giving till the end, but short of her goal of 1,000 cranes. I was 14, well shy of any comprehension of the evil that tortured and killed Sadako and so many like her and like me. But I was safe with Enola Gay on my desk, safe in my ignorance of atomic bombs, an inherited dependence upon a warrior god, until my children taught me to fold paper cranes.
Wow, very lovely. Nice.
Thank you. Yeah, that's beautiful. And, you know, and I think we are kind of raised in that culture, and I think it's very interesting that the Japanese, having been defeated like that, like you said, not seeking vengeance, but talking about peace and in a culture. And, you know, I'm always kind of amazed that nuclear weapons haven't been used since then. And I don't know how much longer that's going to last. You know, what do you think? What has been, why have they not been used yet?
Well, one would like to say common sense, but yeah, that doesn't really hold up when we get on our war pads. I had a conversation with my mother. It was very painful for her back after in the early 70s when I found out about the writing that Gar Alperovitz, the research he had done, because she had always believed that the atom bomb had brought her husband home safely. My dad got home when I was 18 months old because the war was over. And you kind of point out in those days, people didn't say, we won, we won, we won.
Yeah.
The war is over.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
what was yeah, important.
Right.
And it could have been over a month earlier. It could have been over earlier than that. But now as we go for retribution and retaliation, and the Japanese celebrate Peace Day on August 6th. Also, the statue of Sadako in Hiroshima is engraved at the base is, this is our cry, this is our prayer, peace in the world. Mm. So I just think that's a powerful message that should be rubbed in our nose every time we have a bill in Congress to increase yeah, spending on nuclear weapons or to refurbish nuclear weapons, that kind of thing. And it's illegal now, by the way.
You right. Know?
I have never seen anything in Spokane media whatsoever, newspapers or television. I'm sure there's been something on public radio. Well, I think there must surely have been something on public radio, probably on in KYRS, but about the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons, which is international law.
Mm-hmm. And right. It's been broken, though. You know, the non-proliferation of treaty, you know, that's what my thesis was about in college.
Yeah, why don't you mention, what's the title of your thesis again?
It was, this is from 2000, I wrote this, New Threats Warrant a Drastic Change in the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. But that was, when at that time, it was because Pakistan and India were developing nuclear weapons, and they were going at each other a little in conventional warfare. But, you know, that's settled down quite a bit. Now it's North Korea and China starting to build up their nuclear arsenal a little bit, and Iran is trying to get nuclear weapons. So it's always something. But this nuclear non-proliferation treaty that was signed back in, I think, 72, the whole idea was we were supposed to disarm with nuclear weapons, and that all the signature parties were supposed to start pushing, you know, start getting away from that,
yeah,
and then that's never really happened. So with Russia and the United States, even after the Cold War ended and the wall came down in Germany, the nuclear weapons stayed and nothing really changed. So,
and in a way, it's been a moneymaker. Huge corporations make billions of dollars off of nuclear weapons, and that's one reason they keep the nuclear power plants going as well. I mean, some people claim that's part of green energy, but we could do a lot more with a lot less risk to the population for green energy. But the money, you know, you follow the money, and the money is so huge that people don't see the incentive. Yeah. And, of course, none of the signees of the treaty were nuclear weapons holding countries. Yeah. And you mentioned earlier the amount, that the percentage that Israel has, and Israel still has not actually said,
we
do have nuclear weapons.
Right.
We've known for a long time that they had nuclear weapons. But then they want us to attack Iran. They want us to fight Iran. And because Iran is developing the capacity to make nuclear weapons, and they won't admit that they have them. So,
you know, I always felt like when I was a crew member in B-52s is that I really trusted the political system and and common sense and also just common decency that we wouldn't do it. I mean, we trained for it. We did it. I mean, we said we would do it, all this stuff. But deep in my heart, I always suspected that we would never do anything like that just because of the common decency of people. The people that I knew were decent people. Everybody. I don't care how conservative they were. They were all decent people. But, you know, we've changed. There is probably a 30% of our population right now that, you know, that you have Christian pastors who are saying out loud right now, well, this stuff that Jesus said doesn't cut it anymore. We have to fight. And what Jesus had to say is no longer applicable. So you have people who are out for vengeance and out for blood. And it kind of reminds me of like the abusive spouse that kills his wife and then kills himself, or a cult like the Jonestown that people kill other people and then kill themselves. And there almost seems to be this crazy like blood cult of, and I'd say probably a good 20%, you know, given, you know, how Trump has been doing in polling, I would imagine probably about 20% of the people are solidly in this cult. Those people, I don't think existed back when I was in, or if they did, they had the common decency not to open their mouths. And so I didn't know about them. And so that's what worries me now. That's what nuclear war, I think we've kind of forgotten about it with terrorist attacks and all that. But for me, it has moved to the forefront of my worries just because of who the people are and who the potential of having a really crazed, vengeful person as president again.
Well, and we also have Vladimir Putin who has threatened to use them in Ukraine. So
that's right.
Yeah. So he's currently threatening
hold on to power.
I think it's all about power, but saber rattling and
And you have basically Christian nationalism is the scariest thing on the planet right now for me.
And I won't even call it that. I call it anti Christian fascism.
Well, that's what it is. That's a good way to put it.
And I won't honor them with.
And if you put that theory, I guess I could call it a religion, but if you put that theory together with nuclear weapons, that's really
we're going to bring them back.
You know,
double
toilet
back. Look what we did.
we want to move everything back the way it was in the 50s when we had the arms race.
Yeah, it was so great.
If we weren't supposed to nuke anybody, God wouldn't have given us a nuclear weapon.
That's a good point. you know, it was the forefront of growing up in the 70s. That was the biggest worry we had as kids, you know, duck and cover. And that was, you know, the day, what was the one, the TV movie was it like the day of the Earth? Not the day of the Earth.
The day after.
The day after, yeah.
Yeah, the day after.
We showed that at Veterans for Peace. We hooked into a network. There was an online showing. I forgot what group it was. Maybe World Beyond War, one of those. Got the rights to show it. It had not been seen since the 70s. And that was the greatest audience ever at the time for a TV movie.
Yes.
And it was still chilling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It was scary. We watched it, I think, a year ago.
And then on a lighter note, I have to mention Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Love the Bomb.
Yeah, we would say lines from that all the time on the plane.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Slim Pickens.
That was a pretty good time in Vegas.
That's gallows humor right now.
It is gallows humor. And, you know, also we have been, you know, I got to do my 20 minute to the hour stuff. But, you know, I always play at the end. I play, if I have time, a little Star Trek blurb, because that was always for me. My science fiction was hope in the future. But we have become post-apocalyptic dystopian science fiction. That's how we picture things are going to be this way anyways. You know, it's going to be either nuclear weapons, some virus, or my favorite. Personally, I'm rooting for the Yellowstone super caldera. That's the one. But I mean, you know, it's our mindset. And it's a weird... Yeah. And so I'm worried. Okay, we're going to do our 20 minute to the hour stuff, and then we're going to come right back. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. for Solidarity Spokane, the Inland Northwest's local labor hour, hosted by Cat Sabotage, elevating the voices of everyday workers and worker organizations, fighting for your rights in the workplace and fostering community solidarity. Join us here to reclaim control over your own destiny by reclaiming the conditions and products of your labor. That's Mondays at 4 p.m. here on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. An injury to one is an injury to all.
KYRS is grateful for the many listeners who have donated their vehicles to us. You can join them by donating your unwanted car, truck, minivan, motorcycle, and more. Vehicles are picked up free of charge, sold, and the proceeds help KYRS bring you the programs you know and love. It's easy to donate your vehicle, and it's tax deductible. Just call our toll-free line to arrange a free pickup. 855-KYRS-CAR. That's 855-597-7227. Thank you.
Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan bistro fare and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street. Open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. And we're going to wait for our guest to come back. Rusty had run off, and we'll be right back. In the meantime, I'll play a little bit of music, and we'll be right back.
If you see a faded sign at the side of the road that says 15 miles to the
I got me a car, it's as big as a wall.
Okay. I just had to play a little Love Shack in the middle there because, you know, that's what it's all about. We used to play that. Reminded me when we were on alert, we would play that song in the truck a lot driving around because we would call the alert pad the Love Shack. But, you know, that was funny because I think that was my first taste of Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane was they would wave to me as I was going into base because they would do the our Thursday morning changeovers.
We were out there every Thursday morning, I think it was, at 7 o'clock for 2 years.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. We went out there and I would wave back. And everybody, I'll tell you, there was that's how I think things have changed. There was never any talk of animosity. People appreciated what you were doing. You know, that were Air Force folks with me, you know, it's like, and I think that's kind of changed.
Yeah, I think there's, the culture has warped.
Yeah, it really has. I'll tell you, towards the end, guys were walking around carrying Rush Limbaugh books, and that was the beginning. I really think, you know, everybody wants to disavow themselves from this monster, but it's like you were there at the beginning of the monster and you loved it. And now it's fully grown. Yeah. Anyway, so Rusty, any other events going on? You did the one this morning. And
that's
then
all we have. The library event tomorrow afternoon will be the last one this year, but Nagasaki Day is still coming up Friday, so people should remember it.
Yeah.
And
does Nagasaki have a similar, you don't really hear about people visiting Nagasaki like they
That's
do.
That's right.
Hiroshima.
Well, Hiroshima has always been the centerpiece, and I think it's because of the city and the way they were able to bounce back after such huge devastation. Nagasaki was more mountainous, and so they had some protected areas. The people near the blast were obliterated, just as they were in Hiroshima, but the mountains protected some of the outlying areas.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of radiation sickness, a lot of leukemia, like Sadako had, but the immediate destruction was not as deadly.
Yeah,
I have another book I'd like to talk about, and it's great to have a copy of Hersey's book. This is something that I really didn't know anything about.
That's one Jim has too.
I actually taught ninth grade English accidentally for a while after I got out of the Army.
Okay.
And I taught a book called Death Be Not Proud that was written by John Hersey. And he had such a compassionate feel for it. He had a son who died. Perhaps it was leukemia. I don't know. But he related, I think, very much to the people he had met writing his Hiroshima book, that this Death Be Not Proud was a short book like that, but it was very impactful. And I was teaching it to ninth grade or so.
Yeah.
You could get their attention with a book like that in those days. I don't think you could do that anymore.
Yeah. It's hard to get ninth graders' attention.
Yes.
I would imagine so.
But this other book was given to me by a friend who is very active Lutheran, and this is Testimonies of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Lutheran Hibakusha and Their Families. And this came out of the Japanese Lutheran Church. One thing that people like to forget about, these Christo-fascists in particular, like to forget that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were the two cities in Japan with the highest percentage of Christian population.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So it was really unusual that happened. I mean, since they were not primary targets and so forth, but very civilian population targets. Yeah. Anyway, this comes from the Japanese Lutheran Church, and it's a series of stories based on interviews with Hibakusha, the survivors, and families of victims of the bombings. And there were actually people who fled from Hiroshima after August 6th and went for safety to Nagasaki.
Oh, no.
And I have heard of two parties who actually survived both bombings.
Wow.
And that's just, you know, it, just incredible.
Yeah, that is.
I'd say, what are the odds? But what are the pains and the agonies and the suffering? And Jim Nelson, who gave me this book, well, I need to return it soon, but there are also articles in here that are interesting because here's one by Robert Shear that was written in 84. And one by A Pilgrimage Beyond Symbols, which appeared in Sojourners in 1985.
I remember that magazine.
So there's a picture here of the Peace Center, the symbolic center of the...
Right, and that's the one you saw, right, Jim?
Yeah.
And, and did they still, like, have the people's, like, shadows etched into
the
wall?
Yeah, in the museum, there's a stone that has a shadow of a person on it.
Yeah. Just incredible, you know, just the devastation. You know, and I think the storytelling and reading books about it, storytelling is such a powerful thing that, you know, you can talk about numbers who are killed, but then when you hear, I was listening the other day to an interview on, it was on Sirius XM on the Progressive Channel, and it was, they were interviewing a doctor working in Gaza. And she was talking simply about the people that came through and the injuries of the children and what those were like to operate on kids, you know, with missing limbs and heads and brain matter and stuff that had the triage and stuff. And, you know, it was in her voice, what she had gone through. And I think that has a bigger effect on people than saying so and so many people were killed,
right,
to hear the
individual storylines.
Yeah. And that sounds like these books do a very effective job of that.
That's one thing I was, when I first came to Spokane in 1981, the Peace and Justice Center, before it became Pujals, was showing showed a film that was taken from the a lot of Japanese footage and a little bit of U.S. military footage of this Hiroshima right after the bomb and treatments, doctors seeing patients and, you know, taking the bandages off of these little children and everything. And that was forbidden to be shown in this country up until... Well, many years after, there was 1981, and I was looking at this stuff and saying, wow.
Yeah.
And, of course, about that time, the Ground Zero Center over in Western Washington was starting up, and Archbishop Raymond Hunthausen was raising Cain about the nuclear arsenal on board the submarines at the Bangor Naval Base. And... So the Ground Zero Center is still going, and they have just put out a comic book.
Oh.
And it's Move Beyond Nuclear Weapons. And they have put these characters in here to tell the stories of the bombings in Japan and our own nuclear buildup. Even has Daniel Ellsberg here... talking about how he was arrested so many times after that. And Daniel Ellsberg has become one of my favorite people. I was able to meet him.
He's a friend of mine's uncle.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He was at the one of the VFP conventions that I went to, and we actually gave him a copy of our book.
Oh, cool.
I autographed a copy of the book to Ellsberg.
Yeah, nice.
So that's just a... This is bringing us up to date a little bit, I think.
I'm Ground Zero. I'm going to go there, check that out. Well, we're going to have to split here. We got to go. Anybody have any parting shots?
I got one more. Okay. This is from an article from the Arms Control Association. These are professional people that deal in arms control negotiations. And it's just talking about the U.S. election and the dangers of nuclear weapons and just how little information during the campaign there is about what the candidates think about nuclear weapons and what they plan to do in those areas. Although it does mention that the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 calls for ramping up the U.S. nuclear modernization program by adding more nuclear warheads to missiles, fielding more nuclear-capable bombers, and deploying nuclear-armed cruise missiles at sea. And the writers of this article call that, you know, unnecessary, counterproductive, prohibitively expensive. More nuclear weapons will not enhance deterrence capabilities or improve U.S. security. That nuclear arms control offers the most effective, durable, and responsible path, you know, to have negotiations and try to control these.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we've had, you know, our issues with the Russians, but we've managed to keep the space program going. We've managed to keep negotiations on some of these yes. treaties going, even though some of them have fallen apart. It's not an easy task, but it can be done.
Yep. Okay. You're right. That's a good point about the space program. And Rusty, Veterans for Peace, you want to give a little plug for that before we go as far as how people could find out more about Spokane's chapter of Veterans for Peace?
I would love to. We do have a Facebook page for Spokane okay. Veterans for Peace, and we meet every month on the second Wednesday at the Saranac, part of the community building complex. And you don't have to be a veteran. We have associate members who are very, very active right now, and we'd probably be underground without them, but the rest of us are aging out here.
Yeah.
So it's just been a great organization for me, but to find these people all over the country who have decided that war is not helpful. Yeah. It's counterproductive in anything we want to do for the people of the earth.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, everybody, for listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. We'll rejoin our programming already in progress.
More like Margaret Thatcher, Britain's former right-wing prime minister, pointing out that she, quote, didn't giggle. The sour old senator then mansplained that Harris's laughter made people think she's a ding-dong, even though the dinging seems to be coming from his own head. Interestingly, though, Trump's orchestrated snark attack on Harris's laughter is working. For Harris, by repeatedly pointing out that she has unscripted moments of laughter, Republicans actually make people feel positive toward her. I can attest from my own time politicking in a supposedly conservative state that laughter unites people. I quickly learned that humor is a key that can unlock the mind. This is Jim Hightower saying, moreover, the GOP's churlish demonization of laughter only highlights the fact that, in contrast to Kamala, Trump is a grump. Note that we never see him laugh. He smirks, gloats, and often puts on a smarmy grin, but he never has a joyous belly laugh or shows any genuine sense of fun. Sad for him, but sadder for us if we let his dour demeanor define our America. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.
Thin Air Community Radio, KYRS, Medical Lake, Spokane.
KYRS, Medical Lake, and K222BG, Dartford, 88.1 FM, 92.3 FM, Thin Air Community Radio.
The following program was pre-recorded.
New York, this is Democracy Now!
Standing in the Prime Minister's residence, we are proudly declaring that 16 years of autocracy has come to an end, and we have made sure that we are victorious.
In Bangladesh, the parliament's been dissolved a day after the Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina, resigned and fled to India following weeks of student-led protests. We'll go to Dhaka for the latest. Then it's primary day in Missouri, where APEC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and its